Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry does indeed collide with great business. And today I'm super excited because we're having a conversation about a topic that I think is really important. It's about breakthroughs. And of course, when it comes to running a business, there is an art and a science to running a successful business. But there's also an art and a science to running a fulfilling business, one that brings happiness. And my guest today is Yudan Shi, and she is an expert at helping people break through from where they are to where they want to get through. So helping people achieve not just success, but happiness in their own life as well. And of course, you know, Yudan is the author of a fantastic book called Come Alive, and on her website, there's plenty of resources there for you. Yudan, welcome to the show. It's wonderful to have you here.
Thank you, Jess. I'm grateful to be on your show.
Look, I've been looking forward to having a conversation with you for a little while, and we share a mutual friend. And the work that you do, I find really interesting. And what I'm curious to understand, Yudan, is most people I know who work in the sort of space that you operate in generally end up in that space because of a personal experience that has helped them navigate that path and learn some lessons. So is that the case for you, or did you just happen to always want to be in this space? How did you get to be in the work that you do?
Definitely. Yes, spot on. We often have this joke in the self-development industry. We are here because we needed to help ourselves first. And then we do our research and then we grow and then we are able to find, you know, certain practices and can help others in similar situation. So I haven't always been a coach, even though I guess naturally I always had a gap of talking and advising, strategizing with people. But my formal life was 20 years in corporate, and I was a chief marketing officer for a Fortune 100 tech company in my 30s. So I had my own journey going through, you know, I guess peak of my career, and then I had a dip, and then I had really dig hard in myself to have this breakthrough again. I think in a way that is why my program is created this way.
Do you think, you know, that people, if they've been in their career long enough, most people experience a dip of some sort? I know in my own life, I hit a massive brick wall. I don't even think it was a dip. I think it was a cavity. It was like, it was a big hole. And what that looked like for me was that, you know, in our first dental practice, you know, if someone had looked in on it, it looked tremendously successful. We had lots of patients. We had lots of revenue, good profitability. And yet there was this missing element, a couple of missing elements. One was time to enjoy my life. I was working very, very hard and not getting any time to spend with people that I cared about. But equally, I was getting bored. I felt I was getting stagnant. And the question that I asked myself, and I don't know if you asked this, and I'm sure there'll be others that may ask this, is do I really want to do this for the next 35 years? Can I see myself doing this every single day for the next 35 years? Is that something that other people experience, or am I just the only person who kind of feels like that?
Oh my gosh, I feel like I'm talking to a twin brother. That was exactly how I felt. And in fact, in my book, that was, as I was talking about my methodology, that was the first sentence I actually used, is the awakening moment normally came from the sense of, how did I even get here? And do I even want this?
Yeah.
So I call this defining moment. So, and I remember personally, it was very clear. Up until then, I had been running really fast. If I just step slight back in my history, I, you know, was what I believe a lot of dentists can relate to, a solid high achiever, you know. And I mean, to get into dentistry, you obviously have to be clever enough to at least get the grades. I started school at 4. I went to high school at 8 years old, and I finished university at 17 years old.
Wow.
So even though I didn't do dentistry, I'm a hard worker. You know, I got to where I wanted because I did the right thing and I worked hard. And 15 years into my career, although I was still 31 years old, but like I said, I was already C-level exec for Fortune 100 company. So like yourself, looked successful and looked confident. People relied on me to need to be that way. But one day, yeah, it was a black hole. It was quite not just a hole. It was a void. It was like a hole of void and emptiness that I just suddenly got to that point. I didn't even know what happened. I cannot remember what happened before. I just remember that moment. So I call that the defining moment. And, you know, research shows this is not uncommon. So most people are scared of their defining moments. Rightly, you should, because if you had been steadily lead a good life, you're meant to be happy, yeah, not meant to have a hole or void or black hole or cavity. So you're not meant to be. This is against what we have envisaged our life meant to be. If you're a hard worker, you're smart, you're high achieving, and you have a successful career and financial security, you're meant to look not just look, but feel successful and happy. So when that doesn't happen, it does create a huge confusion. But if you look at the literature, you know, developmental psychology, this is very normal. You know, for hundreds of years, we know at certain stage of our life, around, you know, early 30s, our priorities started to shift. I guess we become more mature. What used to motivate us in youth is now changing. Also, when we were younger, we tend to do things following other people's advice. Parents, teachers, what a society defines, what we believe the culture says, what's right. Suddenly, I guess, in a way, you just really grew up. You grew up psychologically. And so you have started to asking this question, what do I want? So that was the first moment of really, I guess, you know, conflict at your inner level, because the outer, whatever you have achieved, might be based on motivations and expectations, not entirely from yourself. So that moment is actually a great awakening moment. Your inner self basically saying, hey, you're off track. Can we do something about it? If we do something about it, this could lead to breakthrough. If we don't do something about it, for a lot of people, they remain stuck and they wonder why they still remain stuck.
So it's a really interesting point, because when I hit my defining moment, I remember it very clearly. And like you, I don't really remember what happened before that, or actually how I got to that spot.
It's just very sudden.
It's really sudden. And one day, all I knew was that, oh my God, this is not really what I thought my life would look like. And oh my God, I don't know that I can do that for 30 odd years more. Yeah. And so I remember very clearly my defining moment was 2007. I remember it very, very clearly. And what happened in my life, and I suspect what might have happened in yours, you have that reevaluation process going, is this everything that I want? If it's not, what do I want? And then is this the correct vehicle to help me achieve that? And for me, what that meant was a radical shift in what I did. And I sold that business. I sold a house. I relocated from Canberra to Brisbane. And it was, you know, it was a 180. It was a complete different.
Yes.
Now, what I learned in all of that, though, there was some significant mistakes I made in doing that 180. And what I'm curious to ask, because I think you did a bit of a significant career shift and pivot by the sounds of it as well. Do you have to do that kind of radical surgery on your life, or can you make other smaller changes and make your current path more enjoyable, or do you have to get onto a new path?
Yeah, a great question. And this is my biggest learning. Most people, when they think about change, when they have these moments, defining moments come, they freak out and they tend to believe they have to change everything external. They believe that it's external environment, which is our job, our business, whatever happens around us has caused us the deep dissatisfaction. So naturally, if you remove it surgically, just like in a medicine, you believe your pain will be gone. And you may have noticed it does give you temporary relief for a time being. Yes. You get your freedom back and, you know, you get that space to think. But over time, you may come back, you still are somewhat stuck. So psychologists talk about we have different kind of goals in life. When we have pain and when we're trying to run away, so removed external factor, these goals are called avoidance goals. Mm-hmm. So they are not as motivating. Like I said, they can work, but they are not as motivating. And they are still not necessarily aligned with your real purpose. But if we have goals, that's what we call approaching goals. So you actually set a goal, not based on get rid of this, but based on this is what I truly want, you're going to feel much more excited. So I did a kind of 180 degree like you as well, although I did not move my family or anything, but I did leave without a job. Mm. And I was happy for 2 months. And then I panicked. Then I was stuck. I'm like, what have I done? Who am I? Now, even lost my identity. And it was very, very painful. Mm. So I had to go back to corporate, the same job, but in a different company, a better company. It was through that experience I realized I was the co-contributor to my own misery. Right. I was the co-contributor to where I ended. The problem was, like many high achievers, we were running so fast and so blindlessly, we never stopped to think and check in with ourselves. So we just assumed that we haven't done anything wrong, so therefore we need to do this. But as I went back to the corporate, and before that, I took a whole 12-month break before I went back, I already began my study of my Master of Coaching Psychology, and I learned so much about human development and midlife period, etc. I realized there's a reason why we felt the way we felt. And I realized, like the word used earlier, actually, change does not have to be drastic. Change does not have to be daunting. Change is actually best managed in a gradual process. It's not meant to be managed in a drastic process, because if it is, then we are actually missing the whole point, which is developing ourselves.
Yeah, that was a lesson I learned the hard way as well. And I'm happy to, for the audience listening to the show, I'm happy to be very vulnerable about that. I've made some tremendous mistakes in my life, and that was one of them. I'd actually, like you just said, Yudan, I looked at all the external factors and I figured that those things were creating my unhappiness, my sense of, I don't want to use the word despair because it wasn't like I was despairing, but I certainly completely dissatisfied. And what I thought is if I changed all the external stuff, my internal feelings would follow, when in actual fact, I really needed to work internally. And I can say, like what you've just said is you get this temporary relief. And that was exactly what I experienced. I experienced this temporary relief, almost temporary euphoria, I would say, of being free of those external things for a period of time. And then afterwards, I began thinking, actually, I've had a rest now. I've had the opportunity to recover physically and mentally. Perhaps I hadn't done the internal work. And then I started thinking, well, now what? And what I realized is that I'd thrown the baby out with the bathwater. And the reason I'm laboring this point is I was on a Facebook group recently, and there was a business owner there who I suspect is either having their own defining moment or getting close to a defining moment. And I think this is a really relevant conversation for lots of people. So I wanted to ask you, Yudan, you mentioned that it's not the external environment. How do we begin the process of looking internally? Because I completely missed that. I'm a much wiser person for the experience now, but at that time, I don't think I would have known how to do the internal work. How do you start that?
Yeah, that was the toughest part, because it took me a very long time. Well, first of all, it took me a very long time to realize I was the co-contributor to the whole thing. Yeah. And then it was, how do you therefore work on this situation? Again, the most of the time, our culture tells us that almost like you can find this awakening moment. Mm. Like if you could just go to, you know, one more retreat, go to one more workshop, or you just, you know, sit there pondering in the forest, that somehow the answer would just come into you. Again, that's just very drastic. Basically, we are, as a society, we just like instant solution. That's what we are saying. Yeah. So we are hoping one solution will fix our pain instantly. So I think it took me most time, took me the longest journey, just trying to find what is a practical way for people to get back into touch with themselves. What do I want in my life? What really motivates me? What would really make me feel fulfilled? And how do I go about that? It has to happen in our day-to-day life. So I realized that actually, if we can just focus on the habits and behavior that led you to where you were and looking at it to refine these strategy and habits gradually. That will be much easier than to radically bring in a new learning to yourself. Because there's a reason why we were successful and somehow achieved something at the first place. If we threw that away completely, that also defeats the purpose.
Yes.
So Marshall Goldsmith, one of the world's leadership coach, leading coach, he has written this book. It's very much similar on this topic. What he says is, what have got us here won't get us there. And similarly, so if we're looking at these tactics and habits we have used give us early success, what happened is we just kept using them. Mm. We kept using them, so that led to stagnation. Okay, we overused them without flexibly adjusting them. So give you an example of that. So in four email methodology, I talk about four practices. So the four things during when we were overusing this behavior stress, so basically four things tend to get lost. And these four things tend to give us success, but then also, you know, create a dissatisfaction. So the first one is autonomy. Because we tend to do the right thing, which means we're very responsible. We're very responsible, very diligent. And that gives you success. If we only do things based on expectations of others, or hoping don't let others down, or hoping we're doing the right things all the time, all these criteria is not based on ourselves, based on others. So then eventually you do not even know what you want. So all we need to do is simply refining that particular strategy. Go, okay, every day I'm just going to ask myself one question as an example. Looking at today, looking at this week, how many things have I done is purely trying to please others, truly meet the expectation of others? How many things have I proactively done for myself? Just that one question alone, and you can literally practically document how's going every day. You will go, oh my gosh, 90% time, I'm reacting, not leading my life. So you can now adjust that very, very simply. Another example, for instance, is talking about, you know, workaholism. A lot of us work really hard. And again, that's how you get to where you are. But if you work very, very hard every single day without knowing how your energy, how you are really perform, and the science tells us this, science actually tells us more you work does not produce necessarily the optimal result. There is a limit on how you work. In fact, a recent research last year from Australian National University, also based in Canberra, they did a survey that in Australia, if you also have to do some domestic work at a home, your professional maximum hour should only be 39 hours in terms of being optimal. That means anything beyond 39 hours actually is not giving you additional performance results or happiness or success. Is actually starting to create stress, distress, and the symptoms of mental illness. Wow. So, you know, by even just learning that one tactic, you realize, okay, hang on. So what you're telling me is working hard is really great trait. Except when I worked excessively hard, you're now telling me actually will make me less happier. That is exactly it. So it's about, don't stop working hard. Just work hard, but knowing when your body needs recovery.
There's something in that as well, I find, you, Dan, as well, is that lots of people that I work with in terms of clients, really successful, really driven people, and equally in the broader community of which I'm part, lots of entrepreneurs, communities that you're part of as well, there seems to be this mantra of hustle, 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 you know, more, 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 work hard, work, you know, sleep is for the weak kind of routine. And I, as I'm getting older, I'm hopefully getting wiser, but I'm also starting to understand the folly of that. But even though I understand that, what I've also noticed is that a lot of business people have a problem switching off. They might understand that intellectually and go, 39 hours, I get it. So I've got to be effective for 39 hours. But how do I fit everything into 39 hours? The volume of work versus the time available doesn't always marry up. So what sort of things would you say to those people?
Yeah, definitely. So it's all about understanding what really optimal performance is for each individual. And we all perform differently. So again, this is why it's so interesting. And back to our earlier point, that it is all about knowing yourself. Hmm. You see, the second we remove ourselves out of that painful equation, we lost an opportunity to know ourselves.
Yeah.
So know how we can perform at a peak level, because I think theoretically, we all know this is true. If I give you an example, you know, if anyone to think about, have you ever had an hour or 2 hours of your time and seemingly in that 2 hours, you perform far better than 10 hours another day when you're tired? I'm sure we all know, we can all find an example, or maybe a problem you have been thinking about all night, all day, you just couldn't figure it out. Rather than keep going on the problem, you might just go, you know what, I'll just go to bed. Yet in the morning, instantly, you find an answer.
Yeah.
It happens all the time. So what does this science tell us? The science tells us is the amount of time is not equal. And the hours are not equal in our day. If you're smart about how your body truly performs, you could potentially, your 39 hours could be as efficient as 390 hours.
So this
is what I'm trying to encourage people to go. Observe yourself, learn about yourself, look at your day. Again, very similar to the example I gave before. It just takes observation. When do you feel most energized? When do you feel your mind is most clear? When do you feel always tired, even you have eaten well? When do you seem to be able to do things creatively?
Yes.
Just through 1 week observation, you will be able to adjust your routine slightly. Simple things I have told my customer, for instance, if you know, if it's a very intellectually stimulating project, if you're trying to do it in the morning, it's always better for most people that do it after 2 p.m. And that alone can save, you know, can speed up by 3 times, 4 times. Or it could simply be, if you don't work entire day, as example, Sunday, if you just don't work entire day on Sunday, and I want you to compare yourself. So this is all about observation. If you work every day, then I want you to take a day out. Yes, you're losing a day, but I want you to compare how different you produce your work on Monday morning.
Yes.
Most people will come back saying, I can get it done in an hour, and that work could have taken me 5 hours. So more through these little daily observation practices, these people start to get motivated. They start to get motivated to work smarter rather than harder.
Yeah. So again, it comes back to the quality of the time rather than the quantity of the time. And I think just one of those little habits that you've mentioned there, and certainly something that I like to do in my own life, and certainly the clients that I talk to as well, is putting in place a buffer day from time to time.
Yeah,
a buffer day, or just ruling off a day in your calendar or in the appointment book if you're a dentist, and literally just not working, having a 24-hour period where you don't do any work, you don't think about work, you consciously go and enjoy family time or whatever it is. And my experience and the experience of the people I work with is very similar to what you've just recalled. And that is, by the time you return to your work, you're more energized, more productive, more on top of what you're doing. And really, it just feels like you've had this exponential leap in productivity. So I totally understand, and I really resonate with that. What I wanted to ask you was to come back to a comment you made earlier in our conversation, which I found really intriguing, actually. And I'd love to explore that with you. And what intrigued me was when we were talking about when we were in our 20s and then hit our early 30s, we suddenly matured. We matured psychologically, and our needs and motivations changed. I've certainly observed that in myself, and certainly I'm sure most people would observe that as well.
It's common.
But what I'm curious about, what happens in your 40s and 50s and beyond? Because again, is there the continual maturation process? Do we continue to change? And I guess what I'm asking is, what motivates me now? Will that motivate me in 10 years or 20 years? Probably not. And I'm curious about, how do you handle those transitions so that when that transition time comes around again, we can better handle it?
Yeah. We always evolve. So it doesn't actually matter how much we grow, how well developed we are. I believe we are evolving all the time. The difference between the first time you're encountering a defining moment compared to the journey after that is really depending on how each individual managing the first defining moment. So yeah. For you and I or people alike, because we have done something about it, we naturally would have created some sort of reflection space as part of our operating rhythm. I think it now become quite natural for you to check in with yourself. Yeah. For instance, if you are unhappy today, if you are dissatisfied today, it's likely you might ask yourself multiple questions because you have learned how to manage that. So the question I typically ask, if I'm doing a fulfilling work, I believe I have found my calling, you would think you should be happy. But you know, you still have these moments of dissatisfaction because we're only human. But now I know how to ask these four practical questions. So my first question normally when I'm feeling not happy is actually always overworked. When I'm tired, I'm always unhappy. So now I have learned a strategy to guide myself. Have I just overworked again? The second question I always ask myself now is, did I lose having fun again? Which is slightly different. This means variety. This means novelty. So imagine if all you do is dental business and podcasts, even you love both. But if that's all you do every single day, you're going to be bored again. You will stagnate. Yeah. So same, if all I'm talking about is this, no, there's no novelty in there. There's no variety in there. So I ask myself, am I being too singular in the way I'm dealing with life? The other question I ask myself is, again, am I trying to doing everything under pressure so that I can make other people happy? And the final question I tend to ask myself is, am I being picky again? Am I only looking at all the things I am not quite there yet, not quite good enough yet, and I'm just being so picky and self-critical? Whenever I ask these four questions, it always brings me back to the ground fairly quickly, which is the full practice I'm trying to teach my clients to do. So I think to answer your question, yes, we will go through transition period again. Yes, our priority will change. We will have unexpected moments that we weren't mature enough to handle. But I think if we always just pause, if we just go pause and not panic and reflect and be in touch with ourselves, our body and our mind and asking these questions, likely we will find the cause for that.
Ladies and gents, if you've just tuned in, I'm having a conversation with Yudan Shi all about achieving breakthroughs. And of course, our whole philosophy is to create not just a practice that you love, but a life that you love as well. Because business, as much as I enjoy it and as much as I'm sure you guys enjoy it too, it's not life. It's a part of life. And what we want to create is both success and fulfillment. And they are not always the same thing. And so if you have just joined us now, I'd really encourage you to go back and listen to the last couple of minutes of what Yudan has been sharing, because what I think is really important to understand is that all of us are going to evolve through life. All of us are going to encounter headwinds and challenges. And what Yudan has just given us is four questions to be able to ask ourselves to get back on track and to keep some perspective about things so that you don't do the 180 or feel the need to do the 180 that both Yudan and I did. And I can't comment on Yudan's situation, but I know in my case, the reflection piece that came afterwards was, I could have handled that better. I could have fixed that. I could have not taken such drastic action and ultimately, you know, solved it in a whole lot less stressful way than I did. Anyway, but that's a life lesson. So I'm sure there are people listening to this podcast right now who might be feeling stuck. They might be feeling like, is this all there is? And in fact, I know that there's a segment of the audience who do feel like that. So I'd really encourage you to firstly go back and listen to this podcast. Also check out Yudan's resources and particularly grab her book, Come Alive. What I wanted to ask you next, Yudan, was really ultimately about understanding, you know, some processes and some steps. And we spoke about habits, we spoke about behaviors, and we've touched on some of those already. But are there any key habits or key behaviors that you see the most successful and fulfilled of your clients, not just successful, but fulfilled clients practicing routinely? Are there any commonalities that you see across that group of people?
Yeah, definitely. So if you look at the four practices, in each practice, I will promote, I'll share the best practice I have observed. So the full practice I'm talking about, which is more strength, I'll talk in details in a second. So I just describe that. So the full practice is more strength. Mm-hmm. Second one is care less. Third one is do less. And fourth mm-hmm. one is more passion. So more strength. This one teach you to be deeply in touch with your own natural gifts. Because for most adults, for most professionals, one of the things we feel missing in our life when we talk about lack of fulfillment is even you might be successful, but you don't feel all your talents are fully utilized.
Mm.
When we feel we should be doing more, something just more, you know, fulfillment, and we can't do it, there's a loss in ourselves. Mm. So if you look at the most successful and most fulfilled people, one common pattern they have is very early on in their life and career, they tend to be quite self-aware what their real gifts and talents are. They're not the type who are trying to be good at everything. So they might not even be the typical, you know, goody two-shoe at a school, but they're quite clear what they're good at, what they love, and they will be exceptional. Yeah. They will be exceptional and only in these things. So it requires a lot of focus. It requires them to be very brave just to say, these are all I'm good at and I'm okay with it. I'm not going to waste my time trying to, you know, be like Dr. Jesse Green. I have my own way, you know, I have my own strength and my own genius. And that's all I should be spending my time. Stop comparison. You know, comparison is the killer of all joy. It's the killer of all human spirit. So when we just let go of that and truly focus on your own gifts, that will give you tremendous strength and happiness already. So that's first the practice I've noticed. And there's a bunch of research I saw in my book around, you know, research done around the world, why focusing on strength is the number one habit for high achievers to become even more happy a high achiever. And then the second habit in the careless, and that one is all around shifting our mindset from should I always do the right thing? Okay, because if I always do the right thing, the outcome is always going to be right. That is kind of true, except we are limiting our growth. Theoretically, we all know we need to fail somehow in order to be greater, but we are all scared of failure. I think we all know that. We're scared of failure because we view failure personally. So the problem here is that most people view failure as a personal statement that I am the failure. So the shift here is that if you read, you know, all of this research and all these great stories of these people, you will notice one thing these people always share in common is that they somehow have managed to view failure non-personal. They have separated failure as part of learning from a personal statement. You know, Carol Dweck talks about growth mindset in his very famous book, Mindset. And that's what she discovered as well. Real, real successful people actually understanding looking stupid, sounds stupid, making failure is the faster way to grow. So they're actually excited about failure rather than getting scared of failure. And for you and I, if we were those time 10, 11 years ago, actually, my black hole also happened in 2007, so you know that. So that's, what, 12 years now. If I had a healthier view of life and of failure, I wouldn't have been so scared. I didn't understand failure at the time. I had a fixed mindset and didn't have a growth mindset. So that's the second practice I'm talking about, you know, managing your relationship with failure. And then the third thing in do less, which, as I said, it's all about optimal performance, is I often talk about the story of Bill Gates. So we all know him, and it's just easier to talk about these famous people because we all know them. He's the founder of the Microsoft, and he has this ritual every year, twice a year. Like you said, he doesn't do anything and he doesn't socialize. He disconnects himself from technology. Mm. And you think he's a tech guy. Twice a year, 7 days a week, he goes into his cabin in a forest and he doesn't bring anything technologically with him. And he just reads. He read things he enjoy. He just have free thinking about ideas, and that's it. He calls them thinking week. It restore him. It makes him creative. In fact, a lot of his great innovation came from these, secluded weeks without distraction. So in a way, he only spent 7 days, yet the ideas he came out of these 7 days is much more efficient than he spent a whole year in office. And then the final practice about, it's really about more passion is, again, a lot of people, once we've grown up, we are very serious, right?
Yeah.
We are very serious grown-ups. We don't like losing time. I mean, if I ask most high achievers think about, have fun or have leisure activity, I mean, they think that's a waste of time. Like, I really should be doing something more meaningful. They would think that. But again, the research has shown that actually people who learn to tap into that inner creativity and fun, they are far more, they're far more happier, they're actually smarter. They actually can grow their intelligence faster because it makes them think things outside the box, because you're not repeat yourself every day. Have you ever had, time when you're thinking about problem, you're just so stuck, and then you might just go for a bike riding or go for a run or even just walk your dog. Somehow you just came back, you go, I got it. You didn't get it because you are somehow just magically have the answer. You got it because you just break your pattern and you brought some fun and some variety into your life. So these are really the four practices. I have noticed how the successful people not only successful but also keep their life alive.
Again, I think having those practical, tangible practices is incredibly important. And interestingly, as you were going through those practices, you spoke about comparison. And for me, probably one of the people in my life who's had the most profound impact on me was my grandmother, my paternal grandmother. She was a very, very wise lady. And she used to say to me, Jesse, comparisons either make you feel superior or inferior, and neither is helpful. And
that's wise.
Yeah, I know. And then she'd clip me across the ear and, give me a hard time about something else. But I think that that's been a really important thing, because for me, getting stuck in comparison without exception leads to unhappiness. And the place where comparison is omnipresent is social media. So for me, one of the things that I've learned to do, and I'd say I've still got some work to do on it, it's a process, is disconnecting from social media somewhat. And yes, I use social media for work and so on and so forth, but I'm less and less active personally on social media, because sometimes social media is a highlights reel that leads to comparison. And as I said, every time without fail, I end up in a comparison situation, it leads to unhappiness. So I really resonate with that. And the other thing you mentioned, which I think is really critical as well, is the analogy of Bill Gates going into the cabin and giving yourself that time, giving yourself the gift of that time, that solitude, even that quiet time. And, I do an exercise very, very regularly, which is not going to the cabin for 7 days, but every day, every other day, I sit and I quietly reflect and I quietly think, and there's no devices around. It's me and a piece of paper. And I think it's a really good practice to get into. I don't know that, I'm quite at the Bill Gates stage of going to the cabin 7 days, but even still, that little practice is, you can do a smaller version of Bill Gates's.
Yes.
And it's still really helpful, right?
Yes. I talk about daily restoration. So, do that daily, because we can't also wait until we have that, 7 day moment. You can actually create this reflection moment every single day, this, technology free, use your traditional paper and pen and be creative. I think what we're trying to say here is most people, they believe in order to be successful, they just have to keep going all the time.
Mm.
We were never taught as a child to, just sit and reflect and pause and reflect. That is just not something we were taught to do. Yet all of these things I just shared with you, you can see that it's the people who really give themselves time. to really give themselves time. And why is this so important is that majority of us hold way more knowledge and wisdom within ourselves than what we know. This is the thing. So for me, I was a very logical, practical person. You know, always when I look at these practices, I have to say when I was a bit immature, I was trying to look for the advantage for myself. So that point was always very good for me. When I realized, when people told me, when research shows, I actually held more knowledge inside me than I knew or than I spoke about, that was very motivating for me. That was like, I can cheat here. You mean, more I know about myself, more I listen to my inner wisdom, I actually can have these answers more easily. I was sold just on that point. So I really encourage people to do that, because most people, like, you know, whether when we are not happy or our business is falling apart or whatever reason, our first immediate action is always action. We're like, okay, maybe I go find another course, maybe I go watch another thing. It's all good. It's all good, really. Learning from external is very valuable. That's why we do a podcast. But you need to complement with another step, which is inner wisdom. Going, what do I already know? Could I just listen to myself for a second? Yeah.
Absolutely. The internal work, I think, is where the magic is. And certainly, I had to go and do my own internal work, and it's been the best thing I ever did, really. And even though my 180 at the time, I thought, I could have fixed that, I've ultimately ended up on a path that I'm very happy and grateful to be on. But I guess my comment to the audience would be, is you don't need to hit the wall like I hit. Practice those restorative practices daily. Do the inner work now before you actually really need it, in inverted commas, because I think we need it all the time. But before you get to that defining moment or crisis point, if you can focus on that now, I think that's going to really set you up for, you know, continued growth, continued development, and, you know, breakthroughs that you won't even know that you're having, but you're doing them on a, you know, regular basis. So I don't know if that fits with your philosophy as well, Yudan, but that's certainly been my experience.
Totally. Doing the work every day now. I know that if I don't do the work, I will fall back. Mm. And this is the thing about human behavior. We will always fall back to our default habits. Building habits takes daily practice. And our tendency, we all have these tendencies. We all know that. So for me, if I don't practice, don't do all the things I just shared with you, I think I can fairly still say to myself, I could easily still overwork. I could easily still be just singular focused. I could easily be very competitive comparison person. I could easily fall into all of these things that kill our joy, you know? So I need to remind myself, asking these questions every day, check in before I go to bed. You know, how did I really go today? And gradually, only takes like 10 seconds mental reflection. But it's helpful.
Yeah, it's really helpful. And I think a little bit of joy in everyone's life is a really good thing. Yudan, you've been incredibly generous, not just with your time today, but with your wisdom and your insights. And I'm very grateful, really grateful to you for taking the time to come on our show. I think the sort of work that you do is incredibly important, not just for business owners. Clearly, our podcast is really geared towards looking at business, but I think this is a life skill. I don't think this is just a business skill. I think this transcends business and goes to the core of who we are. And I really want to salute you for the work that you do. I think it's incredibly important, and please continue on with it. I think it's wonderful.
Thank you so much, Jess. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.